You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For this Worry Week, we're focusing on housing. Since last year's election, Labor have planned to build 100,000 affordable homes for their scheme, KiwiBuild. With this year's budget having been announced last Thursday, the government has further detailed how this will be funded. The housing developments will take place over a decade, with the first 30 being constructed now at the McLennan site in Papakura. I spoke to Housing Minister Phil Twyford, and I started by asking when we can expect to see significant improvements to the housing market.
The government's got a really comprehensive and broad reform program in housing. At the centre of it is KiwiBuild. And we've spent the last 6 months laying the foundations for what will be a really big kind of supply line, really, of new affordable housing. We announced recently at McLennan and Papakura in South Auckland the first batch of houses that actually Housing New Zealand are building on land there that used to be part of the defence base. And I expect by October we'll have the first families moving into those homes, and by Christmas there'll be approximately 30 homes there completed. But our plan is to build at a minimum of 1,000 affordable KiwiBuild homes in the first 12 months of the program from July 1, and then 5,000 in the second year, and 10,000 in the third year, and then on average about 12,000 a year through to when we hit the 100,000 target in 2028. But we're working really hard, actually, in a number of areas to get new houses built. And one of the ways we're doing it is, like at McLennan, where Housing New Zealand is able to build affordable KiwiBuild homes as part of bigger developments of state housing. Another way that we're doing it is working directly with private sector developers. We call it buying off the plans, and we're talking with dozens and dozens of developers right now about how they might be able to include KiwiBuild homes in the mix as part of bigger developments that they're doing. And you know, one of the problems right now in the construction industry is that there are so many developments that have stalled because the developers just cannot get access to finance. If we buy KiwiBuild homes off the plan or underwrite them, we can take some of the risk out of it for the developers, speed up developments and get them across the line when they otherwise might not happen at all. And then the other way is that we've got a number of very large-scale developments like the one we've been talking about at Unitech in Mount Albert, where we're looking at building about, you know, more than 3,000 new homes, with a significant proportion of them being affordable KiwiBuild homes.
So the price caps for Auckland and Queenstown range from $500,000 to $650,000, depending on the number of rooms in the homes. Once the first buyers of these houses have lived in them for a few years, say, and then they come to selling them, will they be able to sell the properties at a more expensive price than what they bought them for?
So our policy's been for the last few years is that what we would do is require people, if they sold a property within a certain number of years and made a capital gain on their property, then they would be required to refund at least some of that capital gain back to KiwiBuild. So you don't get a situation where, you know, through the hard work of government and the taxpayer, people are getting an affordable home and then they flick it on and make a big profit. I don't think anybody wants to see that, and so we're working on the details of that policy right now. So I expect that will probably be the arrangement where if you sell within a certain number of years, you'd have to pay back some of the capital gain.
The Ministry for the Environment recently published a report that showed more than 35% of Auckland's fertile soil has been consumed by developments of lifestyle blocks. And Auckland Council's 30-year unitary plan has some safeguards, but they have been overseen in the past. Should those recommendations be followed more closely in these developments?
I think you'll find that the Auckland Unitary Plan actually very clearly sets aside, for instance, the best growing soils out near Pukekohe and some of the best market gardening soils in the country. Prior to the Unitary Plan being adopted, those protections weren't in place, and there are some examples of housing subdivisions encroaching on the growing soils there. But you know, the unitary plan actually, I think, it operated in exactly the way it's supposed to. They took the, there's this pretty strong community view that the versatile growing soils should be protected, and that's what's happened. So I think that's an example of the planning process working as it, exactly as it's supposed to. My colleague David Parker, who's the Environment Minister and responsible for the Resource Management Act, he has recently said that he's working on a, what's called a national policy statement under the Resource Management Act, which is a way that the government of the day can express a particular view about how councils should exercise their responsibilities under the RMA. And so he's proposing a national policy statement precisely on this issue of protecting the growing soils from urban expansion. So that, in fact, is one way that central government can give councils pretty clear direction and effectively directing them under the RMA to protect those growing soils. So if you take the example of Pukekohe and Auckland's southern suburbs there, there's a lot of land out there. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the areas where over the next 20 or 30 years there's going to be a great deal of housing and urban development out there. But there's plenty of land to be developed without touching the growing soils. If you wanted to, and I think probably there's a lot of people in our community who would like to protect those growing soils, you could do that and still there'd be plenty of land to develop as well.
So now moving away from KiwiBuild and onto homelessness, because along with the Prime Minister last week, you announced a $100 million package as an urgent aid to our huge homelessness problem. Could you please outline the package to start with?
Yeah, so one of the big things we've been working on actually since we formed the coalition government was putting together a package of measures for winter 2018, where there's always a big spike in the need for shelter. People who are homeless or living in substandard conditions, winter is the worst possible time, obviously because of the cold. We don't want to see people living in cars and garages, and so we've been pulling out all the stops to make sure that everybody who needs it can get shelter. So we've been building more state housing and community-provided housing. We have been continuing to roll out supported transitional housing. So this is when someone finds themselves homeless, they can get a roof over their heads and access to whatever services they need to help them get their lives back on track. And we are now up to, I think, more than 2,150 places, that is, homes for individuals or families around the country. And the third thing is what we've done is expanded Housing First, which is an internationally recognised way of dealing with chronic homelessness, so people who are literally without shelter, often people who are sleeping rough in urban areas and who in many cases have got other big life challenges, perhaps mental health issues or addiction issues, what we know is that Housing First is a very good way of dealing with people in that situation. It puts a roof over their heads, no questions asked, and then brings the services to deal with their particular challenges. So, and we've Housing First program has been operating in Auckland and Hamilton with some very encouraging results. It's only been going for about a year. It's being extended to Wellington and Tauranga, and extra money that we put in the budget means that we can take it to places like the far north and one or two other regional centres.
Right.
So that's a package of measures, and we should have, by the end of winter, we will have in place an additional 1,500 homes for individuals or families around the country, over and above what we had last winter.
Going back to what you were saying about the state housing as part of the package, how many more state houses are currently being built?
We made a commitment in the budget last week, yep, that we would, over the next 4 years, increase the number, the supply of public housing, that is state housing and housing provided by community organisations, by 6,400. Okay. And we're investing large amounts of money to do that. So Housing New Zealand is borrowing nearly $3 billion to build those houses, and investing another $900 million out of its own operating reserves, and that's supported with another $235 million of annual subsidies, rent subsidies that state housing tenants get. So that's a really significant investment. Frankly, I don't think it's enough. I'd like us to be building a lot more than that. But, sure. You know, governments have a lot to do, a lot of different competing priorities.
With the difference between state housing and the Housing First that you were just talking about, would you not hope to one day have a Housing First approach to all of these housing solutions? Because, you know, especially like you say, with winter coming up, there's really no time to waste with getting people into the extra state houses that are being built.
Yeah, the great thing about Housing First is that it is really the insight that it's based on is that the most important thing is to get a roof over people's heads first, no question asked. And when people have secure, warm, dry housing, they're then in a much better position to think about work, to get their health sorted out, to think about finding a long-term, sustainable, permanent housing. So I think that's been a really big breakthrough in the way people think about homelessness. But my kind of guiding principle here is that, yes, we need a better safety net. We need to build emergency housing. I don't think anyone in New Zealand thinks it's okay for kids to be sleeping out or living in the back of a van or in an uninsulated garage, all these terrible stories that we know are going on in our community. But the real answer, the sustainable solution is just to build more housing, permanent housing for people. And that's why I want us to build more state housing as well as more Kiwi-built affordable housing, and I want us to reform the rental market. And, you know, there's a big, broad agenda that we have to implement.
Sure. And part of that, we talk about homelessness, and of course this is just another area in which we see an overrepresentation of Māori. And the budget that you announced last week includes $37 million for Māori development, and part of that money is allocated to housing initiatives. What in particular are these initiatives?
So there's a particular initiative in the budget that's about supporting papakāinga housing, so supporting hapū and iwi to do developments around marae in some cases, and also to use collectively owned Māori land to develop housing. But really the big gains for Māori in this budget are in amongst the massive investments that we are making in housing, health and education. Now, if you look at housing as an example, Māori are grossly overrepresented in homelessness figures on the state house waiting list. And the more services we provide in that area, the more state houses we build, and the more emergency housing we provide for the homeless, Māori are going to see very significant benefits there. In relation to Kiwi Build, our affordable home ownership program, it's tragic really that Māori have been so badly hammered over the last few decades by the housing crisis that Māori home ownership rates have dropped by half in the last 25 years. They're now down to about 27%, so roughly half the rate of the general population. And so with Kiwi Build, we're working hard on ways that we can make sure that whānau Māori get their fair share of the benefits that Kiwi Build provides. And we're looking at ways that Māori organisations can work directly with whānau.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.